I wasn't surprised.
Why is that?
Well, I said how she didn't look mad or upset when she came in and said those mean things to me. But she looked a little bit crazy. Darla said so, too. Darla's one of our top salespeople, and she was right there. She saw the whole thing, and she said how that girl's just crazy in the eyes.
Eve headed back toward her office, and Peabody walked briskly out.
Dallas, Peabody moved into a jog. We just confirmed the Mackeys in Divine on the afternoons of both attacks. They're on the feed today, at the counter ordering, at 1425.
Both?
Yeah. The security feed's a 24-hour loop, so we've missed catching them after the first incident. But while Uniform Carmichael reviewed the feed, Officer Shelby talked to some of the staff. Two of them remembered the Mackeys and the day because of the attack. Both agree they came in around 3:45, just after the peak of the after-school swarm.
Were they carrying anything?
Find out now. Did he have any kind of case? Did she? Backpacks, bags, rollies. Now, Peabody.
Yes, sir.
Eve went straight to her office, snagged the results from EDD the minute she saw them.
On screen.
Hands on her hips, she studied the buildings highlighted in order of probability. They'd gotten lucky with the first nest, she thought. Maybe that luck would hold.
She had a backpack.
Peabody came to the door.
That's it. No briefcase or luggage or bags of any kind on the feed. Just a backpack. The wits don't remember any bags either from yesterday.
So they went to their hole after the strike, had time to stow their weapons, then get fucking ice cream.
Get me a conference room.
We've got A. Whitney has it reserved for us for the duration.
Briefing, everybody, 5 minutes.
Do you want EDD?
I said everybody.
Eve grabbed what she needed, went straight to the conference room. She updated the board, brought up the EDD map on screen, split it, and began assigning sectors to various officers and detectives. She glanced over, frowned, when Rourke came in.
I didn't know you were still here.
I wasn't. Now I am.
As they didn't need me, particularly in EDD, I did some remote work. Now I'm back.
How can I help you?
I don't... Actually, you could bring up a map on the other screen. Focus on a place called Divine on the east side.
I know it. So do you. At least their products.
I've never been there.
Because we stock it at home.
One of the perks of owning it.
Your place?
Actually, it's in your name.
Even with her mind full of cop details, she stopped cold, blinked at him.
I own an ice cream joint?
You own what many consider to be the premier ice cream parlor in the city, he told her as he worked.
No one can ever know.
Sorry.
Distracted, he glanced over and saw her eyebrows drawn together.
What?
Especially Peabody. No one can ever know my name's on some big deal ice cream joint.
I see we'll be canceling our plans for the Lieutenant Dallas Frosted, but as you like.
That's a joke.
Ha ha. Why is my name on...
No, later. I'm losing my focus.
Then tell me, how does Divine play into this?
They go there. The Mackeys. It's their celebration place. They went there after each strike.
The amusement, the slight curve of his lips, faded away.
Kill people. Enjoy a banana split.
Something like that.
You've dealt with some monsters in our time together, but these... They're a separate breed.
Father and daughter celebrating death over ice cream while families mourn.
He rewards her. He trained her, helped make her, so he rewards her for a job well done.
I'm looking for their hole.
If they went to Divine, having stowed the weapons first, I leaned toward them holing up in a place within reasonable walking distance of the ice cream joint. According to my information, Divine has been their place since she was a kid. Others began to file in as she spoke. I'm going to ask you to take a deep dive into Mackie's finances, but even considering pension, death benefits from the wife, he's paying rent on two places. He's had to acquire all the weapons, the false IDs. That's got to stretch his income. So the hole's likely low rent, maybe a month to month. It's doubtful he's had it more than 6 months.
Dallas, Uniform Carmichael and Officer Shelby are on their way in, Peabody told her. They won't be here for at least 15. Loop them in remotely. They don't need to come in.
Loop Chief Tibble, Whitney ordered as he stepped in.
I've got them, Feeney moved to the comp. Everybody else, give your attention to screen one. Note the buildings highlighted. These are potential nests for today's attack on Times Square. Note your sectors, Eve added.
In the first strike, the suspects used a hotel room, a conventional check-in. They may have done the same here. You'll search your sectors, hotels, flops, office buildings, studios. The program used to determine these probabilities also, as you see, lists probable angle and direction of strike. You have the most likely floors and angles.
Hit all, hit thoroughly. Talk to clerks, supers, beat cops, LCs, merchants, dog walkers, residents, cleaning crews. They didn't pick the nest at random, so at least one of them cased it previously.
Find it.
She turned to the other screen.
Divine, she began. Best rocky road in the city, Jenkinson commented, then shrugged. Just saying.
Your endorsement's so noted. Apparently, the suspects agree, although she prefers the caramel sundae. We've learned the suspects indulged themselves after both strikes.
Fucking cold, Feeney muttered, and I ain't talking ice cream.
Zoe Younger, Willow Mackey's mother, states Mackey has taken his daughter to Divine regularly as a reward. That pattern remains here. The woman strike took place at 1515, Times Square at 1321. The Mackeys were caught on Divine security feed today at 1425, and witnesses state they came in at approximately 1545 after the woman attack. In both cases, Mackey carried nothing, and the daughter only had a backpack.
So they left the nest, went to wherever they're holed up, stowed the weapons. Then went out for dessert, Baxter concluded. And consider the timing. On the afternoon of the Central Park attack, they packed up the weapons, left the Eastside Hotel, and were ordering ice cream about 30 minutes after the first TOD. Today, the time between the attack and the wit's statement of their arrival at Divine is more than an hour. It's a full 30 minutes longer for them to travel from where we project they used a downtown nest for the strike on Times Square to the east side location of Divine for their celebration.
Takes longer to get there from downtown, Santiago began. That's a factor. But both times they ditched the weapons, the bags. Could they have their own transportation?
He didn't, Loewenbaum said. Never knew Mackey to have his own vehicle.
Eastside Hotel has garage parking for guests, Eve added. The Mackeys didn't check a vehicle there.
And unless he's bought one that's as secure as our tactical units, Loewenbaum added, there's no way he'd leave weapons inside a vehicle, garaged or on the street. If he has transpo, he'd still stow his weapons in a secured location.
He may have recently acquired a vehicle, as he plans to settle with his daughter in Alaska when he's finished here, but I agree a trained officer isn't going to leave a laser rifle in a parking lot while he gets ice cream.
Once more, Eve gestured to the screen. It takes longer to travel from any of the highlighted locations downtown to the parlor. Add that 30 minutes. But after the first strike, they arrive at the counter, according to the wits, 30 minutes after the first Vic's TOD. "There are holes on the east side," Jenkinson said. "Probably within walking distance of the parlor. You said it's their place. A father-daughter deal?" "That's right, and that's right. So we focus on this area. First Avenue to Lex, 55th to 50th. That puts the parlor in the center of that quadrant. They could easily have walked from their nest on 2nd Avenue to any location in that area." "That's a lot of doors to knock on," Carmichael calculated. "Which is why the E-Geeks will eliminate the unlikelies while the rest of you find the nest. We have potential targets in protective custody. You should all familiarize yourselves with the interview recordings conducted today. To summarize, it became clear during the interview with Zoe Younger, Willow Mackey displays psychopathic tendencies, which include offing her brother's puppy, threatening her stepfather with a knife." "The brother too, sir." Trueheart flushed as she stopped, turned to him. "I'm sorry to interrupt." "Forget that. Go." "The kid broke down during interview." "I call it opening up," Baxter corrected. "He felt safe, and he hasn't. He felt like he could talk to Trueheart, and Trueheart would believe him." "That, and I think he felt like she, his half-sister, couldn't get to him." Trueheart glanced at the board. "The kid's been terrorized, Lieutenant. He said sometimes he'd wake up in the middle of the night and she'd be in his room, just sitting there, staring at him. Once she held a knife to his throat, dared him to call for help." "He never told his parents?" "He was afraid to." After a moment, Trueheart hissed out a breath. "I could see how scared he was, Lieutenant. She said maybe he'd end up going out the window, going splat on the sidewalk like his puppy. Or maybe his father would end up with his throat slit some night if he didn't keep his mouth shut. Or how his mother might fall down the stairs one day, and when the cops came, one of his toy trucks would be there. They'd put him in jail for that. She'd make sure of it. He's just a kid, sir. He believed her." "He was right to. She planned to kill all of them once she completed the assignment for her father. Anybody here thinking of her as a child, stop. Until she's in a cage, she's deadly. Anyone thinking of Mackey as a fellow cop, stop. He and his daughter are cold-blooded killers. Find the nest. Compile all data and evidence when you do. Anyone assigned to the field, dismissed. Feeney, do whatever you can to lower the number of locations for the hole. You got that. You want to play?" he asked Rourke. "I do, yes. Come up when you're ready." Rising, Feeney stuck his hands in his baggy pockets. "Any sense there's anything weird going on with these two? I think being LDSKs..." "Oh." Eve's hands slithered into her own pockets. "No, nothing like that." "Okay, then. He's gonna want a place with two bedrooms. She's nearly 16, so they maybe share a nest, short term, but for longer term, probably two bedrooms. Guy wants to go to Alaska, he's probably trying to save money where he can, so like you said, nothing upscale." "Yeah, we can knock the number down some. McNabb, let's get started." "I was just thinking." "He does that." With a half grin, McNabb rubbed his earlobe and part of the forest of silver hoops riding on it. "You gotta eat, right? Single dad, right off. And you add they're huddled in to work out how to kill a whole bunch of people. Probably not a lot of cooking, even stocking an auto chef with much more than your basic grab and goes. Takeouts, deliveries," Eve said with a nod. "Pizza, Chinese, subs, those would rank high. And 24/7s, carts.
Even thinking with his stomach, that's not bad.
Feeney gave McNabb a light punch. We'll add it in.
Loewenbaum, do you have Officer Petroni on tap?
I brought him back with me.
Do me a solid, Dallas. Don't talk to him in the interview.
In his place, Eve thought, she'd have asked for the same for any of her men.
We'll talk in the lounge. The three of us. Why don't you go get us a table?
I appreciate it.
Peabody, I want you to check that all the civilians we brought in are now secure. And it's that needle in the hay pile thing.
Stack.
Whatever. Run the initials of the yet-to-be-identified against every freaking lawyer in the city. Start with ones who advertise, who specialize in personal injury and wrongful death suits.
That's a teeny little needle in a lot of haystacks, but I'm on it.
With only Eve and Rourke left in the room, Whitney rose.
Lieutenant, HSO is inquiring about your investigation.
She actually felt her spine turn to a rod of steel at the mention of the Homeland Security Organization.
Inquiring, sir? Or looking to take it over?
Inquiring with the concept, we'll say, of taking it over.
It's a murder investigation, Commander.
That could be considered domestic terrorism, and, in fact, is being labeled that by much of the media.
Part of her brain might have been raging politics, fucking politics, but her tone held cool and even.
That may be, sir, but the evidence clearly indicates the motive here is murder and targeted murder. The rest is, or was, nothing but an attempt to cover the specific target.
It may be possible to tap some HSO resources without them taking the lead.
Respectfully, sir, I feel we don't have time to jump through those hoops. If I come to believe those resources are more valuable than that time, or that we are unable to move the investigation forward, I would welcome the assistance.
Agreed. It's your case, Lieutenant, and you're clear for as much overtime as you deem necessary. The proper paperwork on same will have to be submitted in a timely manner.
Yes, sir.
Shut them down, Dallas. Shut them down.
When he walked out, Eve pressed her fingers to her eyes.
Fucking HSO. Fucking paperwork. Fucking fuck.
Have you eaten anything since this morning?
For Christ's sake!
He pulled the Nutribar out of his pocket.
Eat this, and I won't add fucking nagging to your list.
Fine, fine! She ripped off the wrapper, took an annoyed bite. Maybe the fact that something that bland tasted delicious meant she needed the damn Nutra part of it.
And since you won't actually want cop coffee, you could drink a bottle of water during the next meeting.
I'm with Feeney, but I'd like to know if you go into the field. He caught her face in his hands, kissed her, firm and hard, then left her. On a sigh, she polished off the Nutribar, half wished she had another, as she gave the board one more study. In the lounge, she saw Loewenbaum at one of the tables with another cop. Vince Petroni, mid-40s, dark hair cut high and tight over a sharp-boned face, brooded into a cup of cop coffee. Since Rourke had it right, she went for water, and was almost disappointed when Vending burped out the bottle without a hitch.
Lieutenant Dallas? Loewenbaum began as Eve and Petroni eyed each other. Tactical Officer Petroni.
The lieutenant says you're sure 100% on Mac.
That's right.
And his kid, his girl.
Right again. Do you need me to run it down for you?
No.
Petroni lifted a hand, rubbed his fingers over his eyes.
We were both Army. Me and Mac. Both weapons specialists. Trained at the 197. We didn't train at the same time, but we knew some of the same people from back then.
You connected?
Yeah. I got a boy, 10, from a busted relationship, and he had Will. We'd have a brew a couple times a week, catch a game, hit the range. He'd bring Will whenever he had her. To the range, I mean. Girl's got some serious skill. I mean, she's a killer on the... Obviously, he heard his own words.
Jesus.
Let it go, Eve told him. You went with them to the practice range regularly. Yeah, but not for the last year or so, but before. I brought my own kid a few times, but he's not interested much. Wants to be a scientist. And anyway, our kids didn't much hit it off. Age difference? Not really. Owen? He gets on with everybody. Old, young, whatever. But he didn't like her. He told me after the couple of times I took him along that he didn't want to hang with Mac when she was around. He didn't like the way she looked. I was surprised, because, like I said, he gets along with people. I said how he couldn't judge people by how they look, but he said it wasn't the way she looks, it was how she looked. At him. At people, Petroni explained. She had too much mean in her eyes. He said when she shot at a target, she saw people and liked imagining them dead. That's pretty perceptive for a kid. Yeah, well, he's got that, you know, extra, we think. We haven't had him tested yet. Both his mother and I think he's too young for it, but he's got that extra. So when he said he didn't want to hang with her, I stopped taking him. Mostly, I put it down to Will not liking anybody pulling her dad's attention off her, and Mac really likes Owen. Mac's crazy about Will, don't get me wrong, but he wanted a son. I guess he sort of thinks of Will that way. Not much girly about her, you know. He got married again. Yeah, Suzanne was the love of his life, no question. He said Will loved her, too. He said, Eve prompted. Yeah, well. After shifting in his seat, Petroni frowned into his coffee. My perspective, Will was okay with Suzanne. From what I could see, Suzanne never got between Mac and Will, encouraged them to have time together. And he was looser, happier with Suzanne. Over the moon when she got pregnant. When she died? Broke him to pieces. Took him down into the dark, man, deep down. Drinking till he blacked out every night. I couldn't talk to him. He shut out everything and everybody but Will. I hauled him out of bars a few times, but then he started just drinking at home, locked in. You didn't report that behavior to me, Petroni. Petroni looked up, met Lowenbaum's eyes. It got bad after you had him take the hardship leave, LT. I didn't see what good it would do to report he was drinking himself sick on leave. And I honestly didn't think he'd come back on the job. He wasn't ready to come back on the role, LT, you knew it. He'd pulled it together some. He was careful there, but we all knew it. You gave him desk work because you knew it, and nobody was surprised when he took his 20 and stepped out. But after that, after he put in his papers, I think he did more than drink himself blind. His ex-wife thought the same, Eve remembered. What more? I went over a few times. He'd lost a lot of weight, looked sick. He had hand tremors, and his eyes. Even in the early stages, even when it's just a little use, you can start to see it in the eyes. You think he went on the funk, Eve said.
God damn it, Petroni, why didn't you tell me?
He was retired, Petroni said to Loewenbaum. You weren't his lieutenant anymore.
And I couldn't prove it.
I knew it in my gut, but I couldn't prove it. When I tried to talk to him about it, he denied it. I went back a couple times after that, but Will was there, said he was sleeping, said he was doing better, was pulling out. How she'd talked him into taking some time away with her out west.
She talked him into it. Camping, she said. Fresh air, change of scene. She had it all worked out. The fact is, he'd taken her out to Montana, maybe up to Canada a couple times before, and Alaska maybe more than a couple.
When's the last time you saw him?
A while now. Maybe 3 or 4 months. He made it pretty damn clear he didn't like me dropping by, and I couldn't say, hey, let's go have a brew. I tagged him a couple times about catching a game or hitting the range, but he put me off. Always had something going with Will. Or she'd answer his link, tell me he was busy, he'd get back to me. But he wouldn't.
Did he ever talk about payback for Suzanne?
Not in the I'm gonna kill a bunch of people sort of way.
He's my friend, Lieutenant Dallas, but I'm a police officer, and I know my duty. If he'd made serious threats, or if I'd suspected, I get that, Petroni.
Right. He scrubbed a hand over his hair. When he was still talking to me, drinking heavy, he'd talk about how somebody had to pay. I think he hired a lawyer.
What lawyer?
He never said, but he talked about hiring one. He'd say stuff like his wife and baby had been murdered and where's the justice? How he'd served his country, served this city, but nobody gave a shit about his wife and baby being murdered. I could talk him down. Hell, I combed over the accident report, the reconstruction. I even talked to Russo and the Witz myself. It was an accident. A goddamn tragedy, but an accident. When he was sober, I talked to him straight about it. He didn't much want to talk to me after that.
Do you know when he moved?
I didn't know he had. But I thought, the way he put me off, the way Will blocked me, he'd just moved on. He didn't want the contact with me, with things or people who reminded him of what he'd lost.
Did he ever talk about moving?
Sure he did. He had this thing about Alaska. Talked about heading there when Will was 18. This was before Suzanne. After Suzanne, it was a farm somewhere. Always some dream about getting out of the city, living off the land.
But nothing about moving within the city? He had a wife and a baby on the way.
Right, right. Petroni closed his eyes as he thought back.
Yeah. Yeah, they were saving up. Yeah, I remember about this. Suzanne was going the professional mother's route. In fact, she really wanted to quit her job and start nesting or whatever, but he said they needed her income over the next few months so they could get a bigger place. They'd looked at some townhouses, low-end places that needed work, east side. I remember that because it would keep Will in the same school, keep them sort of in the same neighborhood. And Mac was making noises about pushing for full custody of her. Around on 3rd, maybe. Or Lex. I think that's the area. In the 20s, or south of there. One of those old post-urban places that got tossed up. Crap, mostly. But you can get them pretty cheap. Ah, they wanted something where they could walk the baby to a park or playground. That was where they were looking.
Buy or rent?
They wanted to buy. Or try one of those rent-with-option deals. You can do that with those post-urbans, or he said you could. I figured, yeah, because they're prefab boxes,
mostly falling apart unless somebody's gone in and put a lot of money and time into it. I lived in one myself, Lower West, when I was in my 20s. I swear the place swayed in a strong wind, but yeah, that's what they wanted. An investment until they fixed it up, until he could put in his papers and they moved to that farm. Pipe dreams, I figured, but a guy's gotta have 'em.
Anything else? Something he said? Someone else he blamed? These initials, J.R. and M.J., do they mean anything to you?
J.R. M.J., she repeated. These two names are on his list and as yet unidentified.
He stopped talking to me about the accident after I looked into it and talked to him. He didn't want to talk to me about it.
There's nobody I can...
Wait, M.J.?
I don't see how it could... He could...
Who?
Maybe Marion.
Marion Jacoby? She has a son who goes to Will's school.
Divorced. Suzanne fixed us up once. We dated a couple times. Just didn't click that way. She works at the lab. She's an evidence tech at the lab.
Hold on. She yanked out her link. Peabody, Marion Jacoby, evidence tech. Find her, get her covered and brought in. She's a potential.
I don't know why he'd go after her, Petroni began. Maybe he went to her. Maybe she tried to do him a favor, ran a reconstruction on her own time, studied the evidence, the reports, and told him what he didn't want to hear.
12. Eve rushed up to EDD, tagging Berensky as she pushed her way on the glides. Marion Jacoby, where is she?
Hey! I'm putting in extra hours on your deal. How the hell do I...
Is she in the lab?
Repeat. How the hell do...
Find out. Now.
Jesus. She's on swing this month, so she ought to be here. If she's in the field... No. Right the fuck now.
His face, one large scowl, filled her screen as he ran his counter length on his rolling stool.
Yeah, yeah, she's around. What the fuck?
Get off your ass. Go get her. Take her to a secured location. I've got cops coming in for her.
You think you're gonna come in here and arrest one of my...
She may be a target, Berensky. She knows Mackie, and she may be one of his targets. Get her safe and secured until my cops get there.
Done.
The scowl turned to a snarl, and his face blurred as he shoved to his feet.
Nobody screws with one of my people.
He cut her off, and with her link still in hand, Eve bypassed the noise and color of EDD Central and shot toward its glass-walled lab. Marion Jacoby, potential target, being secured now. That leaves one. Apartments, condos, townhouses, east side, likely in the 20s or below. The post-urban toss-ups, probably third, possibly Lex. She caught her breath as Feeney immediately started a search and scan. Finances, she said to Rourke. They were saving to buy.
I can tell you he all but emptied his account September 18th and took the lump sum on his pension only last week. He had a $250,000 life insurance policy on his wife, doubled with accidental death, and prior savings of $200,000 and change. With the lump sum, he has more than enough for a down payment. But wouldn't that be foolish?
He may not be thinking straight, but I agree and lean toward rental. Even if he's not thinking straight, it's becoming clear the daughter is, in her own twisted way.
Other accounts. He must have put the money somewhere.
Working on that.
We've already eliminated some buildings and locations.
As he worked, Feeney gestured to a screen where Eve saw numerous buildings blacked out.
We zero in on the post-urban prefabs. We eliminate more.
Nodding, she answered her link, looked at Dickhead.
I've got her in my office. She's scared shitless.
Put her on. Jacoby?
Lieutenant, I...
Pull it together. You're safe. You're going to stay safe. You know Reginald Mackey.
Lieutenant, please. My son. My boy's home alone. Just the house droid. My boy.
We'll take care of it. McNabb, dispatch protection detail to Jacoby's residence. Jacoby, the minute we're done, contact your kid. Tell him to expect officers. Tell him to ask to see identification before admitting them.
He knows that. He knows that already. He wouldn't...
Good. You know Reginald Mackey.
Yes. My son and his daughter have some classes together. I knew his wife, Suzanne.
Did he come to you? Ask you to investigate her accident?
He was desperate. Grieving. He...
Before Eve could shut down the excuses, she heard Berensky's voice.
Yes or no, Jacoby. Nobody's gonna burn you over it. Truth and brief. Now.
Yes. He came to me. Asked me. I did the reconstruction on my own time, and I ran the evidence, analyzed the reports, everything. I had to tell him it just wasn't anyone's fault. I didn't tell him it was Suzanne's, but that's the truth. He was angry, accused me of covering up. Then he apologized. He didn't mean it, but he apologized. I haven't seen or spoken to him since.
Okay. You're safe. Your boy's safe. McNabb, officers' names? Task and Newman, dispatched. ETA 2 minutes. Task and Newman, make sure he verifies those officers. They'll be at your door in 2 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you.
Use your own link, Berensky said, snatching back his own. So your kid recognizes it. Bag this crazy son of a bitch, Dallas, before he targets somebody else in my house. Shit, before he targets me.
We're closing in. She clicked off, dragged a hand through her hair. Swing shift, she thought. Dickhead was putting in overtime, too. She made a mental note to cut him at least a sliver of a break the next time he exhibited dickheaded behavior.
Working on possibles on second, Feeney announced. Still eliminating on Lex, McNabb bounced back.
Feed me the data. Rourke worked a keyboard with one hand, a swipe screen with another. I'll fold it into financials and ID. When her link signaled again, Eve stepped back from their chatter.
Jacoby's secured and being transported to a safe house. Officers are with her son now, Peabody announced. Nobody's hit on the nest as yet.
Get me a consult with Mira.
If you mean now, Dallas, it's nearly 2000 hours. She's not in her office.
Do you want me to contact her at home?
It can wait.
She already had a good picture of the Mackey dynamics.
Anybody who hasn't had a dinner break takes one. 30 minutes. We pull the search for the nest at 2200. All officers and detectives report for full briefing at 0730. Until that time, everyone's on standby.
I'll make the contacts. You're in EDD? Can you use me up there?
I can always use the she-buddy, McNabb said.
Aw, knock it off!
Eve paced the lab. We have a target outstanding.
I'm running the initials. Actually, eliminated some lawyers with them. There are so many damn lawyers, Peabody added, and paralegals and ambulance chasers and disbarred lawyers and just past the bar. Keep at it. Take a damn dinner break, but keep at it.
She paced some more.
5 strong possibles. 3 ranging 21st and 15th, between 2nd and 3rd, 2 on 3rd at 18th.
She turned to Feeney, began to scan the data.
2 on Lex, between 19th and 14th, McNabb added. Another 2 between Lex and 3rd, 1 on 20th, 1 on 16th.
Two apartments, two townhouses, one loft above retail space.
I've got two apartments, two townhouses, McNabb said.
Eve scanned the data. Let's see the houses first. More privacy, and you're in control of security. ID on tenants. On screen. Eve frowned at the first ID shot when Feeney put it up. Then at McNabb's. Not Mackie. Let's see the others.
Zip.
McNabb grabbed his fizzy, slurped some.
We'll move farther south and east to second.
Wait a minute. The townhouse on third. Pull that back up, Feeney.
Gabe Willoughby,
Eve murmured. Willow, Willoughby. Younger said he and the second wife picked Gabriel as a boy's name.
Feeney's droopy eyes lit. Too fucking tidy.
Way too. It's not Mackie in the ID shot, but look at the data. His height, his age bracket, his eye color.
Easy enough to create a dupe ID, one that pops on a search,
Rourke began, and have another using the same name that matches your face. He smiled.
Or so I've heard.
Yeah, I bet. McNabb, full level 3 run on Willoughby. She pulled out her link again. Cancel dinner breaks. Everyone report back to Central for full briefing. We just caught a break. Send me everything you get, she said as she turned toward the door. Conference room A, as soon as you can. Wishing she had Whitney's elevator bypass, Eve took the glides. And as the wish made her think of Whitney, she tagged her commander, at home, then Lowenbaum, still in Central. Peabody ran to catch up when Eve hopped off the glide and arrowed toward the conference room.
What break?
McNabb's running a level 3 on a Gabe Willoughby, 3rd Avenue address. Not Mackie's face, but same general description.
Willoughby? That name. I think that name popped on one of my travel runs.
Peabody pulled out her PPC to check as they entered the conference room.
I just need to... Yeah, Willoughby Gabriel and minor son Colt on the manifest for a shuttle flight to New Mexico in November.
Colt? That's the name of a gun manufacturer. She's passing as a boy. Get Colt Willoughby on screen.
That's not her, Peabody said when the task was done. But
hair and eye color, an easy change. But this kid could be her cousin. Her cousin of the same age, the same height and weight. Run a level 3 on that ID. Use your PPC. I need the comp.
What are you doing?
Running a face recognition on the kid's ID. Let's see if anything pops. As it worked, Eve studied the board, paced in front of it. He'll have multiple IDs for both of them. Cashed in his pension and got an insurance payout for the wife's accidental death. He could afford them. Or a 20-year vet? He might know how to generate them.
More likely the kid could.
Peabody shrugged.
Kids are just quicker with tech, evolving tech, and a teenager's always interested in fake IDs, ones that'll pass a level 1 anyway, like this one did.
Either way, he'd have more than one. Rent the place, do some travel using this one, other travel using another. If he has an account for his finances, that's in another. Credit cards, link account, mix it up. She spun back when the comp signaled. There's the face, and Colt Willoughby is actually Silas Jackson, age 16, from Louisville, Kentucky. Forget that search. We've got them. No, let it run. The more evidence, the better. But use the comp now to get me everything you can on the 3rd Avenue property.
I have that for you, Rourke said as he walked in. Already sent.
Handy. Peabody put it up.
I also ran a facial recognition on Willoughby, who is actually Dwayne Mathias, 53, from Bangor, Maine. That's cop thinking. And you insult me, he said, flicking a finger down the dent in her chin, when I have a dozen pizzas on the way.
Pizza?
Eve gave Peabody and her happy dance a sidelong look.
Nobody got that dinner break,
Peabody pointed out. I grabbed a yogurt bar, but that's it. And hungry cops may be more likely to make mistakes, Rourke concluded. I thought hungry kept you lean and mean. I'm feeling mean. Eve stared at the blueprints on screen. But pizza sounds okay. Cop thinking, she mused. And he'd done the work faster than she had, plus pizza. Hard to complain. Tri-level duplex, she observed. John's on the first and second only, so I'd say keep first level clean. They're gonna get deliveries. Don't want weapons or plans in view. Sleep second. Use third for strategy sessions, storage. Fire escapes, rear, and potential roof access. Third bedroom on the second floor could be used for work, too. Subway's an easy walk or run if you need to run. Bus stop's convenient. It's a good location. A good HQ. One that's showing its age, Rourke added, and the effects of poor construction. Willoughby rented with an option, and as the asking price is easily $50,000 over what it's worth, I'd conclude he didn't bother to negotiate. He doesn't plan to buy it. I agree with that. The rent's low in any case. Lowenbaum stepped in, looked at the screens. You got him. We will. Then let's get to work. Cops came in from the field minutes before pizza. Eve allowed the wolf attack. Rourke was right. Cops had to eat. And brought them up to date while they ate. McNabb, your level 3 results. He swallowed a hefty bite of pizza, loaded.
The ID cruised through a standard level 1. And would have passed a sloppy, even a down-and-dirty level 2, but it cracked like an egg on 3. Totally bogus ID, Dallas, but a decent one. Nobody but law enforcement runs a 3, and then generally only when there's a major crime involved.
Same on the second suspect, Peabody put in. Just like the one the suspect used for check-in at the hotel.
That keeps it clean. Establishes pattern. Peabody, push the warrant through now. We go with the same op as before. Lowenbaum's got his team in their ready room. EDD will roll out using sensors to let us know if the suspects are inside. There's an art studio on the west side of 3rd. McNabb and Callender will set up there.
Lowenbaum.
He rose. Used a laser pointer to highlight the projected positions of his men.
Petroni will access the studio with McNabb and Callender.
He requested the assignment, Lowenbaum told Dallas. He's one of my best. He'll stick. All right, then. Saddle it up. Peabody, we roll with EDD.
This time they rolled in the dark. After a long day of hunting. As they drove across town, Eve went over every step, tried to calculate every possibility.
He'll want to protect his daughter, Rourke said,
but she shook her head. He's not running this show. He only thinks he is. She may play the student, the apprentice, but she's driving the ball now. Maybe she's been driving it for a while.
Do you see them as willing to die for this?
She doesn't want to die. She wants to kill. He has a mission, fucked up as it is, and would probably die for it. But she wouldn't have stopped there. She wants to kill. We've taken all but one of the targets off the board. We take them down here, or she'll find that last target.
Then, she can wait. She's young, she has resources, she has IDs, and likely she can get more. How long can we keep everyone she's after protected? She's got time on her side of this. We take them down here and now. When they reached the drop-off point, McNabb gave Peabody a finger wiggle and slipped out with Callender. Didn't look like cops, Eve thought, in the bright coats, patterned air boots. They walked briskly, as anyone would on a windy night in January. Eve ran through check-ins from her men, from Lowenbaum and his, as Rourke and Feeney got to work.
"He's got it barricaded," Feeney told her.
"What do you mean, barricaded?"
"Shields on the doors, on the windows. Stun deflectors. He's put some work in here, and some serious moolah."
"Can you get through them?"
"Not with a stun or a laser on anything under 5. He's got some jammers set up, too, but give us a minute here."
"Last stand," she murmured. He figured he had more time. Time enough to finish the mission, hope to get out with his daughter. But if and when it came down to it, he'd take his last stand here.
"Are they in there?"
"Working on it," Rourke muttered, while Feeney coordinated with McNabb and Callender. "The place may be a pile of shite, but he invested well in his bloody moat."
"There now? Nearly there now?"
"Feeney?"
"Yeah, I gotcha. McNabb, you following?"
"Right behind you, Captain. It's wobbling, it's sputtering, and
we got it.
Several heat sources popping, but..."
"I don't think so," Rourke said quietly. "Another minute here."
"He's set them up.
Counterfeits. It's false imaging," Feeney explained. "We can survey and eliminate.
First floor's generated. No warm bodies there," Rourke said.
"Surveying second level."
Feeney nodded at the small screen.
"And it's clear."
"We're on 3, McNabb announced. "Knocking down the bullshit."
"And that's 1,
Callender's satisfied voice came through.
"Single heat source, third floor, north corner facing west, behind shielded window."
"That's not the girl." Eve hunkered down for a better look. "Too tall."
"She could have gone out for food," Peabody suggested. "Supplies."
"I don't think so. He's on duty. He's waiting for us." "We'll give it 30 in case. If she went out for food, that's enough time. Baxter, Trueheart, split off. Take a walk. Check takeout joints, 24/7s, delis, any markets still open within a 3-block radius. If you spot her, don't let her make you."
"Peeling off now."
"If she's outside, bringing home some egg rolls, we take her down. Fast, hard, done. We may be able to bargain Mackie into surrendering if we have her as weight."
"But you don't think so."
Feeney turned to her.
"He sent her out. Stay covered, stay safe so you can finish the mission. He's the distraction."
"Yeah. Yeah, that's my gut on it, but we have to see it through."
"She could be anywhere.
Lowenbaum, we need him alive.
He can be hurting, but we need him breathing. Have you got a shot?"
"He knows how to keep covered, Dallas, and that's what he's doing. We can punch some holes in the barricades, but right now we can't take him out."
Battering ram would take down the door, she considered, but give him time for whatever he has in mind by the time we get to the third floor. Taking out as many of us as he can, taking himself out, worse, targeting civilians. She closed her eyes a moment, held up a hand so nobody spoke and interrupted her thoughts. "Lowenbaum, does Tactical have anything handy that'll cut through those crappy walls, the common wall?"
After a beat of silence, he answered.
"Yeah. Yeah, we've got something.
Stay where you are. I'm coming to you.
Can you spare Rourke? She asked Feeney.
I think the kids and I can handle things.
You're with me. You don't look like a cop.
Why, thank you.
Peabody, give me that stupid coat.
My coat?
Pink coat, snowflake hat. She pulled it out of her pocket. I don't look like a cop.
Beg to differ, Rourke murmured.
I know how to not look like a cop. I need like a... She gestured.
Purse?
Yeah, a bag thing. Tool or tools can go in that. What have we got in here?
Feeney pulled open a drawer.
McNabb's old satchel. The old satchel was a wild green, just short of fluorescent, with a jagged lightning bolt pattern done in Peabody pink.
Christ, it's nearly as bad as one of Jenkinson's ties.
I heard that, Jenkinson said in her ear. It's not a secret. Okay, give me your coat. Eve took off her much-loved coat, put on Peabody's girly pink coat, and dragged her own cap onto her head. The scarf, too. Eve wound Peabody's bold, brightly colored scarf around her neck.
It actually looks really good with the bag.
Don't ever say that again. She hitched the bag on crossbar.